Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
This is the Donalana Kitchen. We come to you from KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. Well, Donna, as we're sitting here, the year is coming to an end and it's snowing.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
It might as well. Yep. All right. 2020 is coming to a close. And I kind of ran across a few thoughts for the end of the year.
Yeah, we have some summation to go here today, right?
Yeah, we're going to kind of, well, you know, not to get too heavy, but let's think about this a little bit here. I ran across some timeless truths for trying times from Jim Hightower. I kind of keep track of Jim Hightower. He's a writer and opinionated person. He writes a lot about agriculture and humanity in general. Here's a few things he has to say about the end of this year. Well, first, inhale, exhale, and repeat. It has been quite a year. Yes, it has. There's all kinds of what is considered by many of us to be pretty bad and sad news. But Jim Hightower says, do not despair. Contrary to popular opinion, there are some truths about humanity. Number one, most people are fundamentally fair-minded, kind, and generous. Number two, the basic human instinct is not dog-eat-dog selfishness, but social cooperation and sharing. Yes, yeah, Donna, you mentioned about getting the Darwin's theory a little, give it another look.
There's been a resurgence in popular culture of sort of saying, well, you know, when Darwin talks about survival of the fittest, we've misinterpreted that. That's not like the lone person standing there who's the strongest. It's the strongest communities.
The strongest adapters. And that seems to be showing up very well in the studies that they're doing of nature, of other
whoever can get along with other people best is the strongest person.
Even the king of the jungle idea is not really all that helpful unless you've got a group to follow you. Yes, it does. And here's an interesting little thing. Remember that book, Lord of the Flies? I think we read that in high school, and it's very shocking. It was written by a man,
William Golding.
Wilman Golding. And it was not a very pretty sight about shipwrecked British schoolboys who actually sort of got pretty savage and started doing nasty things to one another when they were separated from what was considered civilization at the time. And that was quite long ago that was out. And there is a historian named Rutger Bregman who in 2019 kind of looked at that story again. And he actually found out that Golding was not really all that stable of a person. He was kind of a mean alcoholic person who had Nazi leanings and, well,
not a happy fellow.
Yeah. So he didn't have, his book was not very happy either. And then this researcher, Bregman, decided to do some more studies. And believe it or not, in 1965, there were six children shipwrecked for 15 months off of the coast of Africa. Six schoolboys from Tonga, ages 13 to 16 years old. And they kind of went through the same challenges of how to feed yourself and how to get along. And this researcher was able to track these guys down even so many years later. There are some still alive. And they found out, far from developing into barbarism, they cooperated, made a little community. They even set up a little badminton court and did some singing and poem writing. And yes, yes, there were some quarrels, but they decided that all quarrelers had to go live on opposite ends of the island until they cooled off.
So is the moral of the story, we can all get along if we have enough space?
That might work. Okay. Anyway, it didn't have to turn out quite as badly because these boys were rescued eventually and things are fine. Yes, and it's kind of nice to know that humanity is not quite as bad as maybe this last year would lead us to believe. I hope things will improve a little bit. Today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we'll consider some food policy concerns that maybe we can improve on in the coming year. Kamyar N. Cheyenne joins us to talk about his new book, and we end up this hour with a short look at the Oreo cookie. Well, welcome, Kamyar.
So I just want to introduce you to Kamyar, Dr. N. Cheyenne, who is the director of the Center for Energy and Environmental Education at UNI. And he has a couple of new books about citizenship and being an immigrant, right, Kamyar? That's the new issue here for you?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's nice to be with you.
good time of year.
It's a great time of year between Christmas and New Year.
Right. It's time to relax and reassess. So,
yes.
Tell us about, I wanted to bring this up because, of course, you know, immigration has become a very big deal in the last 4 years in this country. And Kamyar, give us some of your thoughts. You've lived in this country from Iran, right? For 40 years?
Yeah. Uh-huh. For about 40 some years. And really what kind of, I've been very involved here in Iowa. We've lived here almost 30 years, you know, 28 years. And so this idea of this book really came out of trying to share some observations of all these years living here. So that was kind of one motivation to kind of sum up my experiences here in the U.S., some observations. But really, was also, you know, as you mentioned, given the kind of conversations and ideas floating around about immigrants and immigration policy, etc., I thought I would, by sharing this kind of humanizing immigrants, because we obviously all of us are immigrants, this idea is just that different times, right? So, and really the idea has been to kind of cut through this smoke screen of manufactured polarization and manufactured division to really focus on our shared human experience in our own communities, right? It's not about this party or that party. It's really about working together. We're all here. So that really, that was the kind of the idea of this book that and really to remind us of our shared responsibility for citizenship. It's something, citizenship is not just a privilege, it's a responsibility, not just for immigrants, but for everybody.
For all of us, we are all citizens.
So I shared, there is a wonderful community group in Black Hawk County called the Youth Art Team. And so they really work with youth of all ages, from kindergarten to high school, to kind of involve them in the local community and do public arts and all kinds of ways of learning for the youth to learn from about their community by talking to the elders, to others, just all kinds of amazing projects that they've done over the last 10 years. They've been around for 10 years. And their work was so kind of inspiring to me that I approached them. I said, hey, I'm thinking about kind of putting together all these things that I had written over the years. And if they're interested in somehow working with me, see what, I didn't know, we didn't know what it would become. And so after, so a group of six youth artists and I worked together with the youth art team, and the product, so the final product was two short little books. Yeah, uh-huh. Two short books. One of them is basically a collection of various columns that I had written over the years, some in the Des Moines Register, Cedar Rapids Gazette, all kinds of newspapers in Iowa. And then the other one was a gathering of several other immigrants in our community, and the youth artists interviewed them and learned about their lives and then did art around them. So it's a very illustrated. So mine is just a set of essays with some art, some illustrations. And then the second book, which is called Making Iowa. So my book is called My Citizenship Papers. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of double play on words. It's not just the pieces of paper, but it's actually the work that, you know, the way I've become, I've lived here. And the other one is called Making Iowa Home. And it's really about the immigrants and who live among us here and how, what Iowa means to them. These are just basic humanity that is kind of doesn't appear in the, somehow in the common conversations about immigration policy, you know. So Israel, I mean, obviously some news media have done a wonderful job. PBS and Iowa Public Radio, National Public Radio have done, always tell wonderful stories of actual experiences of immigrants. But again, So the youth artists turned these stories into this book, and it's really beautiful. So, and it's all a fundraiser, so it all supports, every penny of the sale of the books go to support the youth art team. So that's kind of the idea of these two books.
Very good.
We should have done, these look like they would make wonderful Christmas gifts, right?
But they just came out.
They literally just came out like a week ago.
Hot off the press. Yes. So can you share from your book or even the other one, what are some of the topics that you gathered and wanted to include in your idea of citizenship, the broad part of citizenship?
Yes. So, I guess what has shaped my thinking let me read to you a quote that maybe captures what kind of, and it's, the quote is by Gary Schneider, who's a writer, and in his book Rediscovery of Turtle Island, here's what he says. We are all indigenous to this planet, this mosaic of wild gardens. We are being called by nature and history to re-inhabit in good spirit. Part of the responsibility is to choose a place to restore the land. One must live and work in a place. And to work in a place is to work with others. People who work together in a place become a community. And a community in time grows a culture. And this idea, I think, has been just very, has guided my experience. Because, and none of this says anything about Democrats, Republicans, or liberals, conservatives. It simply says, we are here. And if we want to take care of this place and live well in this region, we need to get to know each other. We need to work together. And so that's what kind of the strands of work that I've been involved in. One has been kind of becoming active in my own community.
Yeah.
Again, obviously, as an immigrant, I think it's essential, but it's essential for everybody, right? We need to be active. You are active in your community, right? You're running this radio program.
That's the point of the radio show, right?
Exactly, right? You're encouraging people to become active in their community. I mean, that's like is essential for democracy to survive. So that's one part of the book. I have a couple of essays in there. One of them is called Appreciating City Hall, which captures my experience of serving on the city council for 8 years.
In Cedar Falls, right?
Yeah, in Cedar Falls. Yeah. So that's kind of a very interesting story. Some of the stories are kind of humorous. The other one, as you can imagine, where my heart is, which is protecting Iowa's land, you know, and the food. Food is like a big kind of the land we share, and agriculture and food are all in there. So I have an essay called Breaking Bad in Iowa. and I have, yeah, there's several, basically this theme of how we need to be in this place and protect this land around us. This is a fundamental responsibility of citizens. And clearly we have problems in Iowa because we haven't done our duty to protect Iowa's land and water. We have all kinds of problems, as you know. One of the maybe funniest pieces in this book is one of my favorite, and I wrote that almost 30 years ago. It's called A Land Grant Dream, which is a dream of what colleges of agriculture in land grant universities could be and should be. Instead of what they are now.
It's a work in progress, right?
Yeah, it's a work in progress. The other theme is the theme of science and the importance of acting on what we know, already know.
The primacy, a hot topic now, yeah.
The primacy of science and evidence to democracy and to citizenship. You really can't have a working government if decisions are not based on evidence, right? It can't be based on hearsay, based on rumors and hallucinations. It has to be based on evidence.
This is a more recent essay, I take it?
There are five essays in that category, and they're all written over time. This is not just during the last 4 years.
Okay.
It has been, in Iowa, science has been ignored since 1950s. I mean, look at the way land is treated. Look at the way our water, right? It's not just climate. Absolutely. It's not that we're just ignoring climate science. We're ignoring everything about science. And as you can see, it has produced results where a vast majority of people don't want to take vaccines. Like, what?
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
What in the world is going on? So there's a kind of failure of, I don't know, education or culture where we are not paying attention to evidence. I mean, evidence, this is like all we know. This is the world. We are where we are because any progress we've made is because we based it on science. And then I have a couple of things on energy issues of, you know, what are some kind of energy issues that I've been thinking about. So that's really the bulk of what I consider the way I've been a citizen, you know.
And your PhD is in engineering, right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, and then what about Making Iowa Home?
Okay, so Making Iowa Home is the stories of six residents of Black Hawk County who have come here from many parts of the world. And from Thailand, from Germany, from Iran, from Mexico. I'm trying to remember. There are several, Costa Rica maybe. And so the youth artists have interviewed them and have written about them. And so it's an illustrated, it's mostly book of art by the children, by the youth artists, and a little story about the person that they've interviewed to kind of reveal who they are and their story. And so I'm one of those people. There's five other people. So
and so how do we how do you buy these books?
Okay. You basically need to, if you go to Youth Art Team, you got to look up Youth Art Team and you will see a link there.
Youth Art Team.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. The idea of living well in a place, and the idea, there are, for many years, there have been kind of a back to the land, and yes, I can do my own homestead, but, but you realize really soon that even if you want to, quote, get away from it all, we really do need each other, if nothing else, for the, well, the science, the wisdom that we all have. I don't think any of us will be able to do this on our own. And your idea of the land-grant university, too, that isn't that supposed to be where we get some of our information?
Our science? I guess it depends on what subjects we're looking at here. Which brings me to my second question. So as part of the Center for Energy and Environmental Education at UNI, you have something called Farming for Public Health.
Yes.
Tell us about that organization.
Okay. Well, it's not an organization. It's just an initiative. It's an initiative. Okay. So we are, our center has multiple lines of work kind of in our wheelhouse. And one of them is environmental health, improving environmental health in Iowa. And the focus of that, and it's, by the way, it's run by one of our staff, Audrey Tronlam, and she manages that program and farming for, and her background is in public health. And so that's the program she manages. Now, the main focus of our environmental health program is reducing children's exposure to pesticides in Iowa. And we have an urban component, and like lawns and schools and things. And then Farming for Public Health is really an upstream, thinking about upstream solutions that would take away the need for pesticides. And, you know, if you just focus on this pesticide and that pesticide, you know, you get bogged down in things. The whole purpose of Farming for Public Health is to show that we already know alternatives in agriculture, in farming, in agronomy that do not require pesticides to begin with. And we need, and there's such a wealth of knowledge in Iowa among farmers who have practiced those, have demonstrated for the last many decades that it is entirely possible to farm and to have high yield and protect the soil, protect the water, and not use a drop of pesticides and improve everything else, kind of what Wendell Berry calls solving for pattern. And yes. So in this case is a pattern, what we call health, right? I mean, health in every way, in water, in how soil is managed, obviously what the off-farm impacts of practices such as not using pesticides. So that's what Farming for Public Health is. It's not, so what are we doing? Well, Audrey is managing a pesticide and public health working group. It's a statewide gathering of anybody who's interested in pesticides and their, some of their public health troubles. And what we know, how do we promote alternatives to pesticides? How do we further and further, get further and further away from pesticides as a
thing. Are you guys interfacing with the medical community on issues of, you know, how lack of clean water or what do we call it, the pesticide burden maybe affects particularly children, because there is a lot of research now on what glyphosate maybe does or what dicamba is doing. And these are
totally.
These are big issues in Iowa.
Audrey is very well connected to public health community, to medical community, to early childhood. So there is, we're trying to bring all this, and obviously to farming organizations as well. She's very uniquely positioned to know and be connected to all of those. And so it, we for exactly the reason you mentioned, we think in order to, it's not something that just farmers do. This is something we as citizens and public health professionals, doctors, everybody, teachers, school principals, park directors, we all need to know that pesticides are simply not necessary to the extent they're used. Maybe, maybe in rare, very rare thing, it should be a very rare thing. It should not be a routine thing, whether it's on lawn, inside a school, or in farming.
Well, for example, if you take glyphosate, so when it was first introduced into production practices, it is now, I believe, 100 times more widely used than it was initially. I mean, we just keep using more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're finding it. So glyphosate, for example, which is used as a an herbicide, is also used as a desiccant. So then it's turning up in our cereal grains, for example, because it's used to dry the crops out. There are other ways to dry the crops out, but it's so convenient. It's so ubiquitous. Yes. And for a long time, we thought it wasn't harmful to human beings. Of course, now we find out that what it is doing is harming the microbiota inside your intestinal tract, which affects your health in many, many, many ways. Do you see like places where we might make progress on this in Iowa in the, say, the next, well, we're starting a whole new decade here, starting 2021. Where do you see we can make the most impact or change on these issues?
Okay. So, by the way, the website for basically is farmingforpublichealth.org. Mm-hmm. If you're interested to see what all is featured there, we've co-hosted field days. Again, we're trying to highlight alternatives, that a better agriculture is possible. And one of the many positive aspect, many benefits of a good agriculture is that we won't need to use a lot of pesticides. I don't research agricultural policy and how they could affect, Iowa, not the nitty gritty part of it. But all I know is that with the new administration, right, if we are all engaged, we could demand that farm policy, we need federal farm policies, and really to some extent state farm policies, that incentivize all these good practices we already know. Crop rotations, this and that, buffers, some of these things need to be incentivized. I mean, if crop rotation and pest organic practices are incentivized as part of the farm.
Even just non-GMO seeds.
Even non-GMO seeds. So there's a whole, those, you know, Center for Rural Affairs and many other organizations around the U.S. who have ready-to-go kind of policy proposals that would shift us. Rodale has been involved.
We have a new Rodale in Iowa now.
Exactly.
New farm in Iowa.
There's a lot of good possibilities, and I'm going to come back and talk more with Cameron Shan about things that we can actually look forward to, things that can change, and we can do things better in this new year coming up. But I want to take this time to mention, this is KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa.
Have a cool mask you want to show off? Then you should enter KHOI's virtual mask arrange show. That's New Year's Eve this Thursday at 8 p.m. You need to register in advance, so go to khoifm.org and there's a light blue button on the left-hand side that click on and register. And then it's just a question of bringing your A mask.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a tune called The Swallowtail Reel. Some banjo music. Why not? Some banjo music to see us out of this new year by Sam Bartlett. We are here in the Donna Lana Kitchen, and around our kitchen table today, we have a special guest, Kamyar and Cheyenne. And, oh, he's got all kinds of things to talk about. We'll mention his new book, too. But right now, Donna, You and Kamyar are talking about, well, things we might want to do better for the new year.
That's right. And with the change in administration, maybe some other changes will be possible. Although apparently the Secretary of Agriculture that we're getting is a rerun. But he's from Iowa, so he should know the issues. I don't know. Do you have any opinions on what we should be telling Tom Vilsack? It's not the same game as when he left it.
Well, I can tell you that the positive, maybe I'll focus on the positive.
Go for it.
I think one of the things that maybe he understands and has been supportive of has been kind of policies that encourage and strengthen local food systems. And we know, for example, our State Department of Agriculture has been supportive during the COVID. When the COVID money came, they diverted some of that to support local farms supplying schools. And so I think we have a chance of all things that are going on, I would say, where we might make progress immediately is kind of building our local food infrastructure, more food hubs, more incentives for beginning farmers. I mean, if we're going to eat a lot more fruits and vegetables, we're going to need that supply locally. And so building Iowa's capacity to grow more edible food for ourselves and supply schools and restaurants and institutions and basically the entire supply chains that are crops that we could make a living on. I think that's like a wonderful thing that we could start communicating with him and with our own Department of Agriculture in the state. So that's one. One I would say it's the most promising one, kind of has most traction, and we can get more things done.
Really encouraging to hear from you, Kamir, because I have to say, Kamir has been talking about local foods longer than almost anyone I know. This has been it is a national initiative, and we've made a lot of progress in Iowa, largely because of the work that you've done through UNI.
Well, I would say, here's what I would correct you and say, really the main kind of the hub of an encouragement and inspiration came from the Leopold Center and Rich Pirog.
Right, really, but we don't have them anymore.
I know.
Right?
So we made a lot of progress in Iowa when there was a convening entity that
funding.
Brought everybody together, mm-hmm. and we got a lot of good things done and funded those initiatives around the state. Right, Rich Pirog not only brought people together but was in a position to fund many initiatives. And since he left, unfortunately, we really we don't have that as much, and we don't have a convening entity, though. There is an attempt to kind of the local food system, the regional food system working group continues to meet, and though there is very little funding associated with it. So anyway, yeah, local food system is where we can make positive change, and we can, I would say, again, we got out of the sustainable ag movement in Iowa, which includes PFI, Rodale, Iowa Organic Association, Iowa Farmers Union. I think we need to meet with Vilsack and explain to him the upstream solutions that would solve for a pattern of health, that those things that the Matt Liebman has researched and many others and all the farmers, they can say, look, these help us have more of these. We have so many stories to tell, right? So many stories of success of what Ron Roseman has done, what Paul Muggy has done, what Denise O'Brien has done, what food hubs have done, what you have done, what chefs could do, what restaurants, what caterers could do. I mean, there's just so much that we know if we invest in it, it will multiply and it would actually create jobs in rural towns. And so there's just so many positive things to engage him. I would say the other thing, the negative, not negative, but it's a reality, like we need to better regulate pesticides nationally, not just in Iowa, but nationally.
Yes,
we definitely need to do that. It's just a public health threat.
And at the moment, the only regulation we're getting basically is coming through the courts, through lawsuits.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Yeah,
which
it's
will continue. Yeah,
yeah,
but
yeah.
But definitely the USDA and the FDA could both step up on this. And there were some pesticides that were about to be deregulated, and then that was reversed at the beginning of the Trump administration.
Yes.
So maybe some of those things.
Chloropyrifos was one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Say that word again. I can never say it.
Chloropyrifos.
Yeah. Which is particularly damaging for children.
Yes.
And they were just about to deregulate that or basically outlaw it.
Yeah.
And then that got just dropped like a hot potato. So hopefully some of this will get picked up. We have the science.
We have a receptive Secretary of Ag who is receptive to local food improvements. And again, so there's one element that that's where I think we need to do more of, which is we need to reach ordinary Iowans. Vilsack by himself cannot change everything. We need many more Iowans demanding better agriculture in Iowa, better food in Iowa. There is food insecurity in my county. Half of the children in our county who go to school qualify for free and reduced lunch. So oh there goodness. Is
there
that,
is, that's a shocking percentage in Iowa, don't you think?
Yeah, there is just a lot of poverty. There is so we gotta and food is a human right. They should be able to. They should have access to good food, and so there is just so much to rebuild around a good, healthy food system for everyone.
Well, I mean, I must say that COVID has probably cleared the decks on some of these issues, and they have become more obvious. So that may be a hopeful thing to come out of this, you know, national travesty. So we got some things, good things to look forward to in the coming year.
Yes.
I think so.
Good.
I think you're right, Kamiya, that hopefully will be a focus that we can, from Iowa, can kind of motivate some of our We do have a good, strong network. And even though we don't have the Leopold Center, the PFI and even the Farmers Union, those have all grown tremendously since we don't have the Leopold Center. Those organizations have stepped up and are really doing incredible work. And our new Rodale farm that's in Iowa, and then the Iowa Organic Association, which I had been involved in for many years, I'm very happy to see that it's a really much stronger organization. Yes. We've got something that we can, we can build out our soapbox and take it to Washington and probably get the ear of Vilsack. So that's good.
Well, we need to, the organizations you mentioned, they're all doing amazing thing with little resources they have.
Yeah.
But they're mostly working by necessity. They are mostly working with their members. The audience of their work is their membership. And one observation I share with you is that we need all of us to not just talk to our members, but talk to ordinary Iowans. We need to help ordinary Iowans understand that a better agriculture is possible, not just our members.
Do you think water quality is going to be the driving issue for this?
I don't think so. I think we need to think about food and health and justice. I think issues of food, health, and justice. Food security, health, and justice. The normal was crazy. We don't want to go back to normal. Normal was crazy. Normal was immigrants being abused in meatpacking plants. That was normal. We don't want to go back to normal. Normal was soil erosion. Normal is a lot of pesticides. We don't want to go back to normal. That's not normal. We can't just talk to our members. We need to explain to people. I explain it to my students every semester. 35 students, they're amazed, they're astonished. They're saying, what? Why aren't we doing these things in Iowa? Why is it such a mess? Well, they totally awaken. They totally see that a better system is possible. And we need to explain that to Iowans. We haven't done that. The only groups that are doing that are the industrial ag people. They keep telling Iowans how great everything is. Don't worry. Just eat it.
Feed the world. Right? Yeah. Right.
Feed the world. We need to go to Iowans and saying, look, with all these beautiful stories of how a better agriculture can feed us and make us more prosperous in our own state because our money is leaving right now. And none of this thing about all these things that we associate with water quality money coming in and cover crop money coming in, none of that is going to help. None of that is going to help change the understanding of ordinary Iowans about our food system. Our food system is messed up.
That's true.
That's why we do this show, Kamiya. Let's do it. Every week we try this.
I think what you just said talks very well to, like you said, in your book, which is called My Citizenship Papers, you talk about living well in a place, not just going there to sleep. No, living well in a place is treating your place as a very, very special place because it helps all of us. We've been talking to Kamyar and Cheyenne about his new book. It's called My Citizenship Papers, Making Iowa Home. And it is, and there's another companion book just called Making Iowa Home. And thank you for collecting all this stuff and writing this stuff. Tell us once again how people can get this book.
You can go to the organization who I collaborated with called Youth Art Team. They work in Blackhawk County, and you can go to their website and order the book. All proceeds go to the Youth Art Team, to support the Youth Art Team, which is the work of engaging youth in their own communities and telling the story of the community.
Very good. The book is My Citizenship Papers, Making Iowa Home. Thank you, Kanyar. Thank you for being with
us. Thank you so much.
Of course. It's so great talking. Always great talking with you, Donna and Lana. All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Take care. Okay. Bye.
You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. Or go to that same website and find out lots more about this fine radio station, KHOI. It's community radio. It is, and it exists because of people like you. Your ears, your donations, your support makes it happen. Well, we've just been through a calorie-filled holiday season, Donna, and I'm kind of up to my ears in cookies. I do like cookies.
Yeah, but we're going to change the subject here. We've gone from the sublime with Kamyar to now the ridiculous.
Well, not exactly ridiculous. We're talking about an American staple here. I wish to put a little thought into the Oreo cookie. There it is.
I say that this is a good choice? It's emblematic of the food system that we're talking about that is not particularly good for your health. But
that's true. But talk about an American cookie, and actually it is a worldwide cookie now. Oreo consists of two usually chocolate wafers with a sweet cream filling. And it get this. It was introduced on March 6th, 1912. It is the best-selling cookie brand in the United States. And
this is not an advertisement for Oreos.
No, hardly. It's made by Nabisco, which is a division of something else now. Everything's getting subsumed. But Oreo cookies are available in over 100 countries. And there's lots of different Oreo flavors. I think it's kind of awful that they're making other flavors, but there they are. Some of the flavors. Oh, you wouldn't get it. You wouldn't believe some of the flavors. In different parts of the world, they have different tastes.
Wait, now it's still the chocolate cookie with the get this flavor list. If you can imagine a chocolate cookie, but the cream in the middle is flavored.
Tastes like birthday cake.
Okay, that sounds normal.
Lemon twist, Neapolitan, watermelon. That's your summer. Oh, icky. Strawberries and cream, fruit punch, root beer float, and here my favorite, pumpkin spice. Ick. Okay, red velvet, key lime pie. Peeps for Easter. Two golden cookies filled with pink marshmallow peep cream. If you know what peeps are, blueberry pie. Waffles and syrup, chocolate hazelnuts. Fireworks have pop rocks in them. Remember pop rocks?
But this is all completely faux food.
Okay, it is. Lady Gaga salmon colored cookie with malachite green filling. That's good. Okay, now this may not appeal to everybody, but in China you can get hot chicken wing flavored Oreos or wasabi Oreos. There you are. It's a bit much. Jelly donut, Mississippi mud pie, banana split, Reese's pieces, triple double chocolate mint. Oh dear, chocolate coconut delight, strawberry milkshake.
All right. I am here to tell you, if you want to exempt yourself from that item in the food system, you can make your own chocolate cookies with flour grown in Iowa.
Very good.
The main ingredient that I think denotes the Oreo cookie flavor is something called black cocoa.
black cocoa.
It's a cocoa powder. It's not the same kind of cocoa powder that you buy that you make hot chocolate, although you could make it with this. The main thing is it's been processed at higher temperatures and longer, so it's darker in color. So you get that black color that you get in an Oreo cookie. And there is a flavor difference. So sometimes, like if I'm making chocolate cake or brownies or something, I put black cocoa powder. I know, for example, you can buy black cocoa powder in the bulk section at Wheatsfield. So it's really easily available in Iowa. When you're there buying your local flour, you can buy some black cocoa and you could make your own Oreo-esque cookies so that you don't have to participate in that particular item in the international food conglomerate business. How's that?
Well, that's very good. And I guess you can put in anything that you want. Yes, you can.
You can make your own cookies. Okay.
Here's another news item. If I see if I'm remembering this correctly. Found this on the internet a couple weeks ago. This also is an item that is for sale in China. Okay. They're working with McDonald's. McDonald's is everywhere too, just like Oreos.
Another multinational food product. There we go.
Should you wish, you can order 2 hamburger buns, 2 slices of fried Spam, mayonnaise, and crumbled Oreo crumbles in this.
Okay.
Now, Donna.
Sorry.
Now, Donna.
I'm being judgmental here. It does not appeal to me.
Now, you remember a couple, maybe last year, the year before, you gave a little diatribe about to not yuck on your yum. If somebody likes something, that's their business, eh?
Okay. I have to say, though, I like to keep my dessert separate from my main course. You know, I like to eat a savory dish. And then if I'm so inclined, not all the time, to follow it with dessert. But, you know, we all do need to cut back on our sugar. Okay. That is an international health problem. Let me tell you.
That's true. And there's a little jar of this black cocoa powder right in front of the microphone here. And it is dark. It is lovely. And
it looks like some good Iowa soil.
It must be good for you. Very good. Well, speaking of flavors, we talked about Oreo flavors. And I want to mention that these flavors come out, just a lot of them, just for a short amount of time, just so they can advertise.
So they can sell more Oreos.
And get us all excited. And so they come and go. They come and go. But everybody else kind of plays around with flavors too, because what are we? I mean, we like to taste different things. In a past Donna Lana show, we talked to Shelby Smith, who has a cricket business.
She's a cricket farmer. She's a beginning Iowa farmer producing protein through crickets.
And her livestock is crickets. And she processes them and flavors them. And I guess she's going great guns. Her business is called Gym and Eat Crickets. Gym, G-Y-M, and eat. Like she likes to be healthy too. These are healthy. Okay. Just to kind of do a year wrap-up
here. We go. Flavor profile.
Her top sellers for 2020 were flavor smoky barbecue crickets, fiesta crickets, and dill pickle crickets.
Oh, those are some Iowa flavors, aren't they?
Oh, well, I've had a cricket, some crickets, and all right. So they got Oreo has got nothing on the cricket lady. She's got her flavors out there too. Yes, she does. Very good. I want to, in thinking of the new year coming up, from the Hightower Lowdown, Jim Hightower puts out some thoughts for the new year here. And here's a parable. An old man says to his grandson, "There's a fight going on inside of me. It's a terrible fight between two wolves. One is evil, angry, greedy, jealous, arrogant, and cowardly. The other is good, peace-loving, modest, generous, honest, trustworthy. These two wolves are fighting within you and me every single day." After a moment, the boy asks his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" And the old man smiles. The one you feed.
That's right.
So be careful about what you feed.
Let's feed those good thoughts and positive attitudes, because we need them.
You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. We had music today by Sam Bartlett and Sue Sternberg. And in the spirit of a new year, we'll go out with a tune called the B Major Be Happy Set. Yes, we are. Yes, you are.
And Happy New Year.
Yes. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.
And thank you, Kamyar and Cheyenne.
Wondering how to party hardy with no parties in sight? No worries. KHOI brings the party to you at 89.1 FM and KHOIFM.org. That's New Year's Eve starting at 5 p.m. At 8 o'clock, there will be a mask fashion show streaming live on our YouTube page. And then it's a dance party. The full schedule is available at KHOIFM.org. The evening's festivities are brought to you in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce and Mary Greeley Medical Center, wishing you a safe and happy new year. Again, all the info you need is at KHOIFM.org.